Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Glad to be here, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. All right, it is Thursday, March 10th, 2005, approximately 4:30 p.m. by the clock on the wall in Big Studio Al. And Ravishing Rick is here. How you doing, Rick?
I'm doing good.
You look a little worn out. You had a nice little drive down here. Rick was quite a distance away from here, so it's nice that he comes all the way down here to visit us on the show and to be on the show, to be my co-host, for want of a better word.
So one day we'll figure out a way to do this electronically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we could do it over the phone. It just doesn't sound so good. And I like having somebody here. It's better to have somebody here just in a room with me to talk. How you doing, honey? You okay? My honey's feeling a little sick. My wife's feeling a little down. It's been a crazy week. You know, I just been looking for work. I had my resume redone by my friend Phyllis, who's one of the people helping with the election reform stuff. She's the one who's doing an audit and going to be getting ready to file lawsuits in Georgia for the indiscrepancies in the Diebold machines that they had. And I heard some new stories about in Maryland, how the Diebolds had a massive failure in there, and the news hasn't even gotten out about that yet. But there was a report about that I got through email the other day.
Kathy Cox has a little pamphlet now that she's sending out and distributing to justify why Diebold is something we can all feel proud of and secure about.
I still don't know what's up with her on that. I don't know if they bought her off or if they got something on her, or she just decided this was, or if she really, really seriously thinks that this is the way to go, the way of the future. But it's just a damn shame that she has placed herself on such a wrong side of an important issue. And it really shouldn't even be an issue. That's what gets to me. This should not even be an issue. The idea of having all the votes counted properly to get as accurate and fraud-free elections as possible, this should not even be an issue. The only people who should be against this are people who don't even believe in the idea that we should rule ourselves, you know, who think that, you know, we shouldn't even bother with elections. Other people will run our lives better than we can. Those are the only people who should be against this sort of thing. And it's just unbelievable to me that that it's even an issue.
Well, it's clear that she's invested a lot of political capital in the whole thing. And she was the one who first brought them in. She was the one who paid, what, $16 million to put them across the state?
Well, I don't know if she paid the money. I think the federal money was just available, and she took it and used it. for that, and she chose the Diebold specifically as the method to which to modernize, if I remember correctly.
Well, but Georgia was also the first state to do it,
yeah,
completely across the system.
Right.
And so she clearly has a lot of political capital invested in this. What bothers me is that there's no way out for her, that she has, you know, painted herself into this corner, and it's going to just backfire on her big time, I think.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, if there's much fraud is going on, as we suspect, and she, of course, is running for governor, guess what's counting the votes that are going to put her in the governor's office, perhaps?
Well, that's where the conspiracy theorists come in, because there's those people who say that she scored some kind of deal with Diebold to make sure that she was elected governor.
Yeah, no, this is all speculation, of course. We can't prove anything, but it's just such an important issue. That I just don't understand why it's an issue at all. And part of it is just the apathy of, for the most part, the people of Georgia. I mean, there are a few individuals, and there are a lot of people who believe that this is an important issue, but who really don't feel like they have any power to act on it. And that's a shame, because we have so many different... And, you know, we were talking about this before we got started, how there were so many different groups of Democrats who are lined up on this issue. That they can't seem to get organized.
But none of them together.
Yeah, it's like, you know, as I've said so many times before, it's like herding cats with these people. And we got a guy, and then we were talking about this guy in our election group, and he's what I call an aged, graying hippie. And he looks it. I mean, he's got the beard, and he's got the cloth cap with all the pins on it, and you know, he always dresses in sandals and, you know, jeans and stuff like that, and. You know, he keeps talking about, because when we do our presentations, I always want to get dressed up in a suit and a tie and all that. As a matter of fact, we have a meeting tonight that I'm going to get dressed up for to go be a part of. And, you know, he's like, I will never wear a suit. I will never wear a tie. Well, he'll wear a suit jacket, but he'll just wear it over his, you know, regular clothes and stuff like that. And he keeps making the point, well, I'm dressed like a regular American. We're all dressed like regular Americans. And I'm like, look, you're missing the point. First of all, the fact of the matter is, you've already got the hippie vote. You've already got the progressive vote. They're already on your side as far as this issue. So you don't have to convince them. You're never going to get the Bush cultist vote. You're never going to be able to convince them. The people that you need to convince are the people who are in the middle. And mostly, whether we like it or not, they're going to make that decision based upon how you look and how you present yourself. If they see you dressed up in, you know, like an old hippie, guess what? They're not going to listen to you. If they see you dressed up in a suit and a tie professional, they're more likely to listen to what you have to say. And if you speak in a coherent, practical manner, unlike the way I'm talking now, but if you can speak cleanly and clearly on an issue and dress properly and dress professionally and look professional, then you're going to have a lot more leeway and you're going to have a lot better chance of getting what you want. And I'm not debating the unfairness of that. But that is the practical truth of the matter, and it really bothers me.
Well, George Bush and the Republicans have shown us that appearance is everything.
Sure.
So substance is nothing. Appearance is everything.
Well, they take it to such extremes, though. I mean, to them, you can just say, "Well, we had a good elections in Iraq, and therefore it's over, and we've won." And it could be total bullshit, but people believe it, and it is total bullshit.
But you see, that's where this whole issue of Diebold and the voting machines and every vote counts is getting lost amongst the people who might care about it,
mm-hmm.
because the groups that are doing it may be too diverse or too diffused or whatever it may be, but the reality is that they have not learned yet how to make it relevant.
Right.
They have not learned how to draw the line in the sand and say, we are going to make this cost you at the legislative level or the governor's level or some electoral level.
Right.
It's the whole thing about being a Democrat, and we're the good guys, and so we can't get our hands dirty.
Yeah, that's a bunch of crap. And as long as we continue to think like that, we will be a number two party in this country. Assuming we survive, because if Republicans get enough power, they'll just kill us off. I mean, they're looking towards that anyway, slowly but surely. Either taking us out of the debate altogether, which they've already begun and done a very good job of, or, you know, if they came down to it, they just out and right kill us. And the truth of the matter is that working people. Let me veer off here for a second before I get into that rant. because I was noticing in the news that the Lockheed Martin plant is on strike out in Marietta. Now, for those of you who don't know, Lockheed Martin is one of the biggest defense industries. And in fact, I think it is the biggest defense industry in the country. They manufacture the F-22. They manufacture the C-30s. They manufacture a lot of high-tech aircraft and have for many, many years.
With parts from China.
With parts from China. Well, I don't know about that much. I haven't heard anything about that. But the thing about it is, this is an old institution. I mean, Martin Marietta merged with Lockheed. Lockheed developed, if I remember right, Lockheed developed the SR-71 Blackbird, my favorite airplane in the Air Force, which was a reconnaissance plane, fastest non-orbital aircraft ever built, capable of doing speeds of up to Mach 5, Mach 6, which is 3,000 miles an hour. In other words, you're talking about you can cross the country in an hour, New York to L.A. That's a remarkable speed. The thing it is, though, that a lot of the workers that work up there, and this is in Cobb County up in Marietta, and they're very conservative, even for union people, and they were union people, they were pretty conservative. You know, they're part of the big defense industry, and we're all proud, we're supporting the country's defense, blah, 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 and they're very conservative people. In fact, I did some work up at Lockheed when I was working for MCSI, and I got to fly in the F-22 simulator, flight simulator, because we were just working on some audio-video systems in there. But these guys are very, very conservative, and now they're on strike against Lockheed, and guess what? A lot of the people that work there are breaking the strike and walking into work, and these people are going to get screwed over. And this is how they're going to get paid back by the Republican Party and by the hardcore right-wing supporters. And they're only hurting themselves. But, you know, and the truth of the matter is, if you're a working person in this country, if you were unfortunate enough to have been born poor and don't have a whole bunch of wealth just sitting around that you can invest with, if you can't afford to invest and participate in the stock market, that you have to earn money through your sweat and through whatever skills that you have, Republicans absolutely friggin' hate you. They'll use you like crazy if you're young and strong or smart enough to be able to, you know, just make a little bit of a living. But the truth of the matter is they hate people who work for a living. They absolutely hate them, and they just as soon kill you than look at you. Half of them. And all these poor, stupid fucking idiots. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're a voting person that votes for a Republican, you're a fucking idiot. They're going to get what's coming to them because they're just going to do whatever they want with you when it suits them.
Or if you're a strikebreaker. Or if you're a Democrat who happens to cross the line in voting for bills that hurt people like us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're talking about the bankruptcy bill right now,
mm-hmm.
there's Joe Biden, who actually I admired and thought he would have made a good presidential candidate. Right? He voted for it.
Sure.
And we know he voted for it. Why? Because Delaware is home of all these credit card companies, but also they gave him $143,000, right? And that would-be Republican, fake Democrat, Joe Lieberman, has also voted for it, as did, I believe, 19 other senators close the cloture on that.
And you can bet your ass that those people are going to be targeted heavily by the Republicans when it comes time for elections. They won't go nice on them. They won't do anything to help them out or, you know, because what they did by doing that was they gave it the appearance that it's a bipartisan bill.
See, the thing is, it's time that the Democrats or people or working people or anybody who's in this non-Republican camp has got to draw the line in the sand. They've got to draw the line in the sand because we pretend to draw the line in the sand right now. I talked to some people last night, some women's group lobbyists, you know, for pro-life and women's choice issues and that kind of thing. And they say, well, what we try to do at the legislative level is we recognize that these bills are going through, so we just try to salvage them the best we can and get as much as we can out of it. But they don't draw the line in the sand. They don't build up the relevancy for the rest of us.
And they don't get people
involved. And what happens is that line keeps – the Republicans are smart about this. That line keeps shifting.
Sure.
Right? It keeps shifting until we ourselves – get painted in the corner.
They keep moving the goalposts as they were. It's like there was another article about how the United States just announced that it's going to pull out of the world court, the international court, because the international court was going to reopen cases about 50 or so Mexicans who are on death row in Texas. And You know, so they decided rather than let the international court take a look at this, they're just bowing out of it. You know, they don't want anybody looking into their affairs. You know. And, you know, it all just goes down to the idea that they don't want anybody to have a real choice in their life. You know, guys like you and me, they want to kind of force us into what Paul Krugman called peonage, which is like indentured servitude. They kind of want to force us into that situation. And they hate it when we have any kind of real choice, as we do when we vote, as we do when we have the economic power to make decisions. And by taking away our Social Security, by helping out businesses who trick us or otherwise try to get us into debt and then make it more difficult for us to earn the money to pay off the debt and then to declare bankruptcy when things overwhelm us, they're basically, you know, trying to put us into a situation where we're just in a constant state of servitude to them.
I owe my soul to the company store.
And that's basically it. You see Grapes of Wrath? Great movie.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Great movie, great book. Of course, the right ones. And, you know, you get on FreeRepublic.com and you listen to these assholes talk about the bankruptcy bill. And while there are a few people who are like, well, maybe this isn't quite so good, the bulk of it is still, you sign the contract, you know, you pay the deal, blah, blah, blah. No one put a gun to your head to make you do it. But that's not the point. You know, and these idiots, you know, it's kind of like saying, you know, if someone's walking down the street, if I'm walking down the street and you beat the crap out of me and take my wallet, that's saying it's my fault for not being able to defend myself. You should have been walking down the street. You knew it was coming when you left your house. You know, you didn't have a gun. You weren't properly armed. So it's your fault. That's what that's saying.
Well, it's all these holier-than-thou Christian right-wing fundamentalists voting for this kind of thing that forget the clause there or the scripture or whatever that said that money is the root of all evil.
Mm-hmm. And what
and Jesus, it is.
And what Jesus,
or they forget about this whole thing about usury, right, which used to be what the Catholics used against the Jews during the Middle Ages.
Well, you know, once the Pharisees, as I call them, the Christian Pharisees, became the official authoritarian religion, then, of course, there was no worries about using the same tools that had been used on them on other people. You know, it's all human nature. It's all part and parcel with what happens when organizations get a little power. Let's stop here for a little bit, and let's hear from our friends at BuzzFlash.com, and we'll return. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. How could the executive editor of the New York Times be the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week? I mean, after all, the Times endorsed Kerry and, as BuzzFlash has noted, generally posts traditionally liberal editorials. And BuzzFlash links to New York Times articles almost every day. So is BuzzFlash.com being disingenuous for naming the executive editor of the New York Times our GOP Hypocrite of the Week? No. Not at all. Because Bill Keller is the prime example of a mainstream newspaper editor who doesn't appear to read his own paper's editorials or learn much from its occasional news stories that point out the daily failures and lies of the Bush administration. As we noted in a recent BuzzFlash editorial, the United States citizens need an investigative reporter to break open the untold story of the subservience of the mainstream press to the Bush administration. In that editorial, we lay out some of our case as to why Keller is a Republican White House lackey, and note, quote, "If the role of journalism is to challenge authority by seeking out the truth behind the official statements, the New York Times fails miserably, with a few exceptions here and there. It in no way conveys the radicalism of the people in the White House, nor runs longer investigative pieces on their chronic deceptions and dishonesty. It pretty much accepts their news handouts at face value." Former Ambassador Joe Wilson noted that the mainstream media seems to think that presenting a fact from a critic, you need to balance it with a lie from the White House. The media pretends that they can't make a judgment between two competing claims of facts, even when one side, the Bush spin of the day, can easily be shown to be a lie. Furthermore, the New York Times news pages don't in any way take into account the unprecedented totalitarian state-like manipulation of the media that has been undertaken by the Bush administration. On a daily basis, the New York Times news section tacitly participates in this propaganda machine, the likes of which hasn't been around since Goebbels or the former Soviet Union. Recently, Lori Garrett, a courageous reporter, resigned from Newsday, owned by the Tribune Corporation, because, quote, "the leaders of Times Mirror and Tribune have proven to be mirrors of a general trend in the media world. They serve their stockholders first, Wall Street second, and somewhere far down the list comes service to newspaper readerships." Garrett, a Pulitzer Prize winner, made it clear that she was also including the New York Times in her lacerating criticism. Quote, "This is not a uniquely Tribune or even newspaper industry problem. This is true from the Atlanta mixing rooms of CNN to Sulzberger's offices in Times Square. Profits. That's what it's all about now." Unquote. And profits will be impaired by Bush cartel retaliation if the New York Times upsets the White House by exposing the charade of this presidency and the radical extremism of the Republican Party. Bill Keller shares an important attribute with Bush. He is deemed likable and amiable by the Eastern establishment and the political poobahs. He's a salesman at heart, a guy whose job is to diffuse criticism of the New York Times as it deftly maneuvers between being a straw horse representative of the liberal press to the right-wingers, who know it represents no real threat to their Potemkin rule, and the pro-democracy movement that sees its news coverage as inherently biased in what it doesn't cover. Lori Garrett said, quote, "This is terrible for democracy. I have been in 47 states of the USA since 9/11, and I can attest to the horrible impact the deterioration of journalism has had on the national psyche." Unquote. Bill Keller, you've done your job well, giving off the congenial appearance of fairness while leaving the betrayal of democracy beneath the Oval Office rug unexposed. Light and truth would be a threat to the bottom line. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
We're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com. Any email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And, of course, I always urge you to write about me and tell me what you think about the bankruptcy law. Email me. Talk to me. Let me know what you think about it. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more. Plus, we were just talking over the break about the movie Super Size Me. So we'll talk about that a little bit, too. How is everybody doing out there? It's Thursday at 5 o'clock, March 10th, and I'm hoping to get the show. I think it comes on at 9 o'clock. On Rant Radio. Rick, how you doing? You still with us?
I'm still with you.
Yeah, we were sitting there watching about 20 seconds of MASH, which my wife turned on just as we were ready to start recording, and she's flipping me off now, which I deserve it probably. I got my wife, I got it more for me than for her. I got her a little sewing machine.
Well, she knows she can mouth every word of your introduction now.
Oh yeah, she's.
I saw her over there.
She does it. She does it. She also. She
Cuppa
also.
Joe.blog, et cetera, et cetera.
She couldn't repeat it, but when I get started, she'll do it because she hears me say it. In fact, she got mad at me when I first started doing it, and I was doing the intro every single time. So you know, why don't you just re-record that? And I finally did. I put it in part of the intro. So, but I still do it at the end of the breaks and stuff because, you know, it's necessary. And Rick here has been trying to give me marketing points about saying that I should say the blog, which is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address, joevec@bellsouth.net. bigsnaggeroonies.net and tell people to write in and talk to me. And then again, you know, write to me, talk to me. You know, when I get somebody good to respond, I'll put it on the air. But nobody responds to me, so I shouldn't say that, should I? That makes it sound like nobody.
That's
listens.
Not true. You get responses.
I do get responses. I get comments on the blog, and I do get emails from time to time. My friend Phil Thompson from filmthompson.org, he sent me some information about how we were talking about the election stuff, about how Diebold had paid people to create programs to rig elections, basically. And the news had come out of Florida, but it's hardly you hardly hear about it on the press. If Bill Clinton was stealing elections, you know, you'd never hear hide or hair of it, you know, or excuse me, you wouldn't hear the end of it. You know, Bill Clinton gets a blowjob in office, and that's grounds for trying to kick him out of being the president. Because they said, oh, it wasn't the blowjob, it was the lying, which is horseshit, because as much as this administration lies, Republicans hate you, man. Republicans do the most hateful thing. You know, and there was someone who had a political cartoon about the Ten Commandments thing. And it was a guy and his wife looking at one of the Ten Commandments monuments. And she was like, well, you know, you mean you don't mind having a Ten Commandments monument up here? And he said, well, maybe they would look at it once in a while and follow what they say. You know, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not, what is it? There's a thou shalt not lie, isn't there?
Thou shalt not bear false witness.
Bear false witness. Bear false witness. By the way, I want to make a correction of something from last time, too. It's not love of money is the, it's not money is the root of all evil. It's love of money is the root of all evil. That's what it is. It's not just having, it's not having money that's evil. It's love of it and the greed for getting it. That's the root of all evil. And I can't think of a better example than what's going on today with the Republican administration and its anti-worker policies and its corporate allies. CUPOJOE.blogspot.com.
You're waiting for me to bounce in there, aren't you?
I don't know.
But, you know, I mean, it is true. I mean, if you think about it, if you just start to examine the bankruptcy law that they're putting out there, it basically means right now most people are protected, at least their assets of their house and the stuff inside their house, right, are protected from the bankruptcy, the long arm of the credit card companies. But under this bill, they would not be. All the amendments that were proposed that try to protect single working mothers, or try to protect the infirmed, or try to protect people who were, you know, out of work because they're too old or they're too sick or whatever.
Or just the economy in general.
Well, that's sort of why bankruptcy happens. But it's like, if you're sick, you're guilty.
Right.
If you're out of work, you're guilty.
Right.
Well, take your fucking stuff, you know.
I don't worry about it too much because, you know, I'm in a ton of debt. You know, I never paid off the car. I had about $10,000 or $15,000 on that. I had several credit cards that just went out, and all of it was really because I was out of work for so long. I was out of work for 11 months in 2003. I was out of work for a long friggin' time. Plus, when I was working, I had the extra expense of the kids, and it was a lot of personal issues that kind of overwhelmed me financially. And I've got to get to the point where I can save up $500 or $600 just so I can declare a bankruptcy. And now I'm not even sure that I'm going to be able to do that. And you know what? To all the people out there who I owe money to, at least as far as official creditors are concerned, because I always try to repay my debts. You know, my friend George Lowe, the Space Ghost guy, I had owed him some money from appearances that he made at one of my conventions. And I paid him a couple of dollars here and there. And then he said, look, Joe, I know what situation you're in. Let's consider it even. You know, you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to pay me anymore. And that was nice because he didn't have to do that. But to all the creditors out there, the ones who continue to try to call me and try to get a few pennies out of me, you know something? Fuck you. Somebody give me a fucking decent job where I can afford enough money to pay these people off without, you know, trying to decide between whether I should pay off these debts or the food or buy food and pay rent and shit. You know? I mean, fuck all of you. Just drop dead as far as I'm concerned because you're not getting a fucking penny from me. You're never seeing a penny from me. Unless I hit the lottery, you're not seeing a penny from me. And the odds against me winning the lottery are very strong when you consider that I never play it. So, but the real people I owe money to, I'm going to make every attempt to pay them. My landlord, Mark, who we owe money to, you know, rent money to, and he's been very, very good about, you know, just being lenient about it because he understands the situation we're in. And that's why I'm trying very hard not just to go into another dead-end job. I mean, the problem with the seaman's job was that it simply did not pay enough. You know, I can't deal with that type of situation. I have to have a job that pays me a decent amount of money. And it was funny because... That's right. So we don't have to choose between my wife's medicine and whether or not we're going to eat that week. And I admit I'm not the most financially responsible person in the world. But my problem is I've simply never earned enough money. You know, we got our income tax check in, and half of that went towards rent. But I bought some shelving units, and I bought some storage boxes, and I bought some things that we needed for the house. What do we have? Two dinners out? Or something, we went to the Chinese place and we got some dumplings and we had a KFC the other day. That's really the extent of our eating out. It's not like we go to fancy restaurants and spend hundreds of dollars. Even when we eat out, we're not talking about more than maybe $10 per person. So it's not like I'm really spending money. Rick, you got go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I don't know how extreme your example is based on everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But what I do know is that there are a whole lot of people out there right now who are stretched as far as their elastic, you know, bank accounts will go, or their credit cards or whatever.
Sure.
They have nowhere to go. They're pulling out every asset, or they're having yard sales, or they're doing anything that they can do just to stay afloat.
Right.
And it's one thing to try to say, okay, you charged up this amount of money, you owe it to me, right? It's one thing. It's another thing to be able to charge and raise the rates on that money freely as you want to. So you can go from 7% or 5% or whatever, or 0% as they suck you in, to 30% in less than 12 months.
Right.
You know, based on your payment record or based on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's usurious. It should be illegal. I don't know why it isn't. And all it does is it buries you until you go to the consumer credit corporations or whatever that can start to bail you out.
And now basically, apart from allowing them to get away with raising those rates as extremely as they do, which they hide in the fine print, and in some cases you miss one payment or are late on one payment, their interest rates can go up and up and up a lot faster than you expect, and all of a sudden you're paying twice what you used to pay as a regular minimum payment. But they're also going to make it more difficult for you to declare bankruptcy. And there's always the perception that people just get credit cards and go crazy and, you know, run into debt. And while there is some case of that, I'm not saying that nobody does that. The truth of the matter is, more than half of bankruptcies are caused by medical issues, and an overwhelming majority of the rest are caused for length of unemployment or lack of a decent paying job. A lot of people are taking pay cuts to people who are working. I feel bad. Well, to a certain extent, I feel bad for the people who used to work at Siemens. And, well, they're going to end in, like, March or something like that. Or May. March or May. But they're closing shop completely. And this after they just signed a 3-year contract with the union. What does that tell you? And you knew the company was already planning on shutting the place down anyway. And they kept talking about how they could become more profitable. But, you know, it's just... All of these people now who had some job security and were expecting to be, you know, earning some money to a certain extent, now suddenly find themselves in the position where they're out there in the regular workforce. That's over 400 jobs up there. So there's a lot of people who are going to be out of work. And some of them were making fun of me because I was trying to do things to prevent that. But, and I wanted to be part of the union and a stronger part of the union. But they didn't really want that because they were more interested in their own little power positions up at the top union leadership. There, so and they were getting me. Oh, you got let go, ha ha. You know, well, guess what? You get let go too.
Well, at the end of the day, it's the little guy gets screwed because you know now these people, in some fashion or another, are going to have to go out and get unemployment checks, which is a mm-hmm. form of welfare, though they paid into it.
Right.
Or they're going to have to get welfare, or they're going to have to get food stamps, or they're going to have to go to Medicaid or one of those policies that is supported as a social safety net.
Right.
But what I don't get, which really irks me, is that those people are just the little people, and the cost of that is not that high. when you look at it against defense, or you look at it a lot of other things,
right.
or just about against the corporate welfareism that goes out there. Delta got his hand out. Coca-Cola got his hand out. Right. American Express got his hand out. All these credit cards companies got their hands out, right, for more and more corporate tax breaks, right? A lot of which are always talking about how it's going to help the employment in that particular community or in the various communities in. But where does it translate?
Well,
where does it translate to people like you and me?
It translates into lower wages and more hours for less money.
Well, where does it translate into more jobs? I mean, I get if they get a tax break at the state government level or the federal level, how are you and I going to get a job out of that? Right? How many more jobs are going to be created, or are just the stockholders going to get richer?
And the jobs that are created is not paying enough money, and that's just the thing. Back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, when the working people had a lot more power, and when the federal government, you know, was much more able and willing to clamp down on stuff like this, if someone had a job, they could not only support themselves, but they could save money towards their retirement. And for a lot of people who grew up in that era and who was working people in that era, people like my dad, they could count on a combination of Social Security and a nice fat pension from their company so that they can retire. My dad made $6.25 an hour in the mid-60s. And on that, not only could he support a family of five, but he could also save up enough to buy a house in Florida and move the family down there. Can anybody do that today by themselves at $6.25 an hour? Not unless they're living at home with mom and dad still and not paying any rent at all. And, of course, how many people are going to be working for a company for that long? There were people there at Siemens who had been working 35, 40 years. Of course, even assuming that the plant wasn't going to close down in May anyway, in March anyway, these, you know, the people that were there, you couldn't expect them to be working at the same place at the same time. I certainly don't expect to be working at a place more than about 2 or 3 years at best. And a lot of people I know haven't worked for a company for that long. You know, they just work here and there and do freelance stuff. And even though I work really hard, I do at least 10 resumes a day, I really try to look for a job that I know is going to pay me enough money so that I can do the same type of things that my dad did. Something that will pay more than $300-something a week, because quite frankly, I can't make it on $300-something a week. I need to be making $700, $800, $900 a week if I can. And I'm told that I have the skills to do that, but being just a poor working guy or just the kind of guy who's never really taken much stock in his own skills, I find it difficult to imagine myself in a position where I make that much money. I'm used to making $10-$12 an hour. And there are a lot of people who are a lot less skilled than I am. I'll say that straight out. I'm a lot smarter and a lot more able to learn things than a lot of people are. Certainly a lot of the people I knew at Siemens. And what chance do they have to even break out of that? I mean, I have the opportunity. My life may be a huge, massive, wasted potential. But the truth of the matter is, for the most part, I still have potential and I can still break out of that. And there's a lot of people, like a lot of the people I knew over at Siemens, who simply don't have that. They're nice people, they're good people, salt of the earth, that sort of thing, but they simply do not have the brains or the skills to do anything above and beyond your basic, you know, maintenance-type jobs or manufacturing-type jobs, which are going away in this country.
Well, here's the flip side of that. And the flip side of that is, you know, here you are, okay, if you made $10 or $12, and that's where you've been for a long time, right, let's go up. You can go up,
mm-hmm.
right? There's that possibility. You can now make $15 or $20 an hour,
right.
or more, $30 an hour. What about the people who made $90,000 a year,
right.
who are now working for $40,000
right.
a year?
Oh, there's a lot right? of that going on.
You know, and what is happening to them? Because they probably invested, you know, they were making $90 when the internet was doing well, right. and. Or maybe they made their 90 while on the internet or whatever they did, but now they're at 40 or 45, and how do they survive?
Right.
Because their investments were all based on a $90,000 income.
And it also depends on where you live in. I remember reading an article in the New York Times about how in San Francisco, not in San Francisco, but one area of California, Silicon Valley, there were people who were making $50,000 a year, but they were homeless because they could not afford to live anywhere in that area. Because all the housing was way too high, because that's where all the multimillionaire .com people were living. And so these people would, like, they had this, like, all-night bus that basically ran this long route. And they would buy a ticket on the bus, and they'd sleep on the bus. And these are people who were making $50,000 a year. That's outrageous. That's outrageous. But, you know, That's what happens. And that's just the way things are in the Bush economy.
Are you a capitalist, Joe?
I'm a strong capitalist. I believe very strongly in the capitalist system. But being a liberal, I believe in regulating it. And I believe that we have to keep an eye on the worst aspects of it so that it doesn't, you know, we were watching that documentary about New York. New York was a city built purely, solely, only for making money. That's the only reason that city ever came into existence in the first place. That's what designed it. Or that's what defined it, not designed it. That's what defined it. And they experienced the great wealth, but also the mind-staggering poverty that made it the big liberal city that it is today. It didn't come about by accident. It came about because there were millions of people in New York living in unbelievable poverty and horrible conditions and working in really bad safety. In bad safety jobs, a triangle worksheet factory, shirtwaist factory fire, where something like 80, 90 people were killed because they couldn't get out because the doors were locked, you know, to keep them from leaving, you know, a few minutes early from work.
What's the difference between that and Walmart?
Well, I guess you can get out the fire exits at Walmart, but you actually set off the fire alarm, and if you leave without a real emergency like that, they'll fire you. Walmart does other shit. Like, they'll go in there. They have had reports, or they have had managers who went in there and they go on the computer and they literally slice hours off of employees. They'll slice an hour or two here, an hour or two there, because they're under pressure from their supervisors above to cut their own costs down. And, you know, that whole, if you take a 15-minute break on company time, that's stealing from the company. Meanwhile, if you've got more work to do and your shift isn't over, they'll make you stay that extra hour or so or 2 hours, but they won't pay you for that. That's stealing from your employees, and that goes on all the time. That's why I urge people to boycott Walmart in particular. I mean, Walmart's not the only company that does it, but they're the worst of the worst, and they're the one who's dragging everything down. And that's one of the things that you talked about, getting tax breaks. They get a tax break to move into an area, and every small business in the area immediately goes dead. Because they cannot compete with these low prices. And then Walmart turns around and goes to their suppliers and demands that they follow the same procedure. So you have companies like Levi's Jeans, which are a great American product, having to outsource jobs in order to cut down their costs so they can put their stuff in Walmart to sell. And the same working people who are getting killed by them are out there supporting Walmart like crazy. I talked to many people at Siemens who just love Walmart to death. And I just used to pound my head against the walls. You people are cutting your own throats. You know,
Walmart is like the pinnacle of capitalism.
I'll tell you the pinnacle of capitalism. Colombia, the state of Colombia in Central America, where the drug lords rule. That's the pinnacle of capitalism because there is absolutely no regulation there. The government doesn't step in. In fact, the government, either lives in fear or works with the system. The drug trade is the ultimate capitalist state.
Right, but aren't low prices in effect an opiate of the people? Right? Aren't they the opiate of the?
It's better to have a real opiate when you have them addicted to your product, and they don't have a choice.
Okay, but I mean, let's talk the real world here.
That is the real world. You go down to Colombia, that's the real world. You get those people down there. That's what they live on. It's a drug trade, man. What do you think they grow regular crops? That's their fucking living. What do you think in Afghanistan that their big crop is? It's heroin. The poppy thing. In fact, we gave the Taliban money because they had cut down on the opium production. And as soon as we took over, guess what started cropping back? The opium production. There's capitalism. And now we've got the China, because of the trade laws, the Chinese industries, the imports for their textile stuff is coming in. It's way cheaper than stuff they can make it here because they pay their people pennies an hour. That's capitalism. That's unregulated capitalism.
It's plenty regulated in China, I promise you.
Well, you know what I'm talking about, though, as far as, you know, lowest common denominator shit. This is why I talk about we have to have global labor standards, and we have to set some sort of wage and price controls. That's where the liberal in me comes in.
Let me throw this in real quick. If you happen to live in the Atlanta area, and you're not doing anything, well, you should be doing this anyway, on the 12th this Saturday, there will be a march upon the Capitol for the workers.
Yes.
Right? There's a workers' march. It starts at Turner Field, and it marches a mile and a half or whatever it is to the Capitol, where they will basically have some speeches and some demonstrations and a general protest about where things are going for the working man in America.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hopefully this will be duplicated all across the United States. So if you want to go, it's be at Turner Field at 8 o'clock, between 8 and 8:30 at the Gold parking lot, which is on Hank Aaron Drive, and there'll be lots of other people there. I'll be there with my wife and my family.
I'll be there.
And we look forward to seeing you there, Joe.
I hadn't had a chance to talk to somebody. Maybe I'll go up there and force my way up to the podium and make a speech for myself. Seeing as how I am the voice of the working people. There's other things going on Saturday.
I think it's the working underclass now,
working
isn't it? Working underclass.
Well, of course, I'm the voice of the unemployed man as opposed to the voice of the
working man. This will change.
I'm sure it will. Anyway, let's take another quick break, and we'll come back with our final segment. Sam, play us out.
The Cover Joe Radio Show will be right back.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. And my wife is struggling not to mouth the words as I say them, now that we've pointed out that she's doing that. An email address, of course, is joevec@bellsouth.net. And if you live in the Atlanta area, hell, if you don't live in the Atlanta area, if you live in the friggin' Antarctic, write to me, joevec@bellsouth.net. Talk to me on the blog in the comments section. Write a note. Say some things. I've been picking up some very good people who are regular listeners. Phil Thompson, for example, who sent me that thing about the people being paid to rig elections for Diebold. Rick, you okay?
I'm good.
Rick had a little bit of a coughing fit there.
There's this flu that's going around that will kill the elderly people.
You're always sick.
I'm just not there yet.
I've noticed that.
No, I've had this flu since just after Thanksgiving that's just been hanging in there, and I'm finally rid of the, most of it.
How do you have flu for that long?
It just hangs in there.
It's this
residual flu. No, neither have I. I mean, mostly it's 2 weeks and maybe a little after that, but this one's been hanging in there.
I don't think I've ever been sick for more than like 2 or 3 days.
Well, maybe I've been supersizing it too much.
We were talking about this, and you said your son went to see this movie. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with this movie, Supersize is about a guy who for 30 days does nothing but eat at McDonald's. I don't mean he eats nonstop, but all the food he eats at McDonald's.
That's right, morning, noon, and night. Yeah. And if they ask him to supersize it,
he does.
He has to. That's his rules. And at the end of the day, progressively, he ended up with a liver that was in a lot of trouble. He ended up with a blood sugar level that was headed towards diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
They were worried about his heart. He was short of breath. He had no energy. And it's not just about him. He's just sort of the thread that runs through the whole thing. But it's about the eating habits of Americans.
Yeah, we eat very
And so
badly.
It's more like, it's not just supersize, but it's more like scare the shit out of me thing. And if you watch it, you will never want to eat at another fast food place again.
Well, I don't eat that many fast food places. The one I like probably the most is KFC, because I like their chicken, which I know is bad for you because it's so greasy in the way they cook it. I do a lot of cooking at home, but let's face it, if you're a working person, you don't always have time to come home and cook, especially if you're a single guy like I had been for such a long time. You don't necessarily have time to make a meal after you finish a hard day's work. You just want something quick and easy to make. And realistically, some of the times the stuff you get in the supermarkets, the pre-made stuff that's cheap and quick to fix, that's not much healthier than what you're getting at a fast food place. I like to get Banquet TV dinners, because they're very cheap. We can get them for 97 cents at Kroger's, and I'll buy 15 or 20 of them at a time, and my wife will eat one. That's a dinner for her. She doesn't have as big of an appetite as I do. But I'll make food. I'm a cook. I like to cook. I'm not a real, like a professional chef or anything, but I do like to cook, and I'm not too bad at it. I'll cook chicken, and I'll cook meatloaf like we cooked meatloaf last night. But fast food in particular is really bad, and I don't eat at a lot of fast food places anymore. When I go out to eat, I try to go to local restaurants. local. There's a local pizza place that I go to called the Avondale Pizza Cafe. That's very good. There's a little place in the Belvedere Shopping Center on Memorial Drive near Columbia, on Columbia, where the Kroger that I usually shop is, called, I think it's called Hong Kong or something like that. But it's basically, they call it New York-style Chinese food. And I'm too young to remember, you know, any particular style of New York Chinese food. But it's very, very good. It's a little pricey, but well worth it. It is actually one of the best little Chinese places I've ever eaten. They have great dumplings, don't they, honey? The steamed dumplings, I love those. And my wife and I'll get two orders of those, one for her, one for me. And that's really enough, you know, to get like eight dumplings for like, I think it's like $4. And it's very, very good. And probably a lot healthier for you than going to McDonald's. And I don't go to McDonald's anymore.
If you're not willing to go to, if you're not willing to go all the way to become a vegan or a vegetarian or whatever, which I'm sure you're not, Joe, but think Japanese.
Yeah.
Because the Japanese have the most well-rounded and healthiest cuisine in the world.
Well, the Japanese and the Italians actually have some of the lowest heart rates, heart failure rates in the world. Most of that is because the bulk of their diet is seafood and starch items, and they don't have as much red meat. Now, we had, when I was on the, with Joey Davis on the Joey Show, we had what was his name? Jeff. He's one of the guys who's giving a lot of lawsuits in Cobb County over the evolution sticker in the books and stuff like that. He's the one who's fighting that. And he was a vegetarian, and we got to talking after we did the show, and he was trying to convince me to become a vegetarian. And I'll tell you straight out, anybody out there who's a vegetarian, and if you are and you want to write about it, just email me, jovc@bellsouth.net, or comment on the blog. If you're a vegetarian, don't try to convert me. You're not going to convert me. I like my red meat. I love steak. I love burgers. And I will continue to eat it. I love poultry. I'll eat chicken like crazy. We had chicken practically every day last week, it seemed to me. I like it too much to give it up. And the plain truth of the matter is, biologically speaking, humans are omnivorous. They're designed to eat everything. I'm not going to argue, and I agree wholeheartedly with the vegetarians along the lines of how we treat cattle and how we deal with this on a mass production level. That needs to be reformed and changed. I'm all with you there. But don't sit there and tell me I only have to eat vegetables, and don't give me this crap about how can you eat something that's alive. One of our favorite TV shows is Roseanne, and Darlene, who is the real snotty teenage daughter, she's a vegetarian, and she gets real snotty about it. And I'm like, you know, she's like, how can you eat something that's been alive? You know, and I got news for you. All those plants were alive, too. Just because they don't have brains and don't have eyes that they look back at you like Bambi doesn't mean they're any less alive.
Yeah, but they're not injected with all that crap either.
What do you think they put into the soil? There's fertilizers and other chemicals.
You can wash that off, Joe.
But what I'm talking about, that goes into the ground. That goes into them. That's how they get them stuff to grow. You know?
No, that stuff is processed as food and stuff like this.
No, I'm talking about chemical
fertilizer just becomes processed part of the biological process. But steroids in chicken, that's why women are growing mustaches.
Sure. I thought they were just ugly. I really, and we got to cut this short because we only had a short one because we talked for so long in the second.
So remember, rally at the Capitol or Turner Field on the Saturday, 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
March.
Be there.
Workers
we gotta
march.
Go.
Be there.
We gotta go right now.
Bye.
Bye.
I want a cup of Joe. I crave a plate of Dave. Open a jar of John. Don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George. I'll sip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? You'd be a pot of Scott. Heat up a pan of Stan. Throw in a handful of Dick. That'll do everything. Open a can of Dan. Make a meal of Sam. But don't give me no mo, 'cause what I really want's a cup of Joe.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been recorded live at the fabulous Studio Al in Decatur, Georgia, and has been produced by Jove Enterprises, Incorporated. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe Radio Show, is a production of Mr. and Mrs. Vecchio of Brooklyn, New York.
of steel, a mug of Doug, a cup of